Okay, we have a number of people with us, and I think some are still joining us. And so welcome, everyone, to Duane Carpenter's Awakening the Higher Mind and the Intuition Through the Use of Symbols. So today we have Asha, Barbara, Chad, Chris, Christopher, Deborah, Diana, Francis, Frederick, Helen, James, Karen, Kay, Leah, Lenny, Lisa, Marissa, Mary, and Michael.
Excellent. I'd like to extend my appreciation for all of the attendees taking time from their busy schedules to be a part of this. I appreciate the opportunity the Moya University has allowed and the important support that you, BL, and Rose have contributed through each one of these presentations. Now, at our last meeting, we went in quite extensively to the crosses. And I'd like to review just a little before we continue along, because I didn't feel that we really fully covered that. And of course, how can you? It's such a vast, complex subject. But basically, DK outlines the importance of the three crosses and how they relate to certain astrological signs, and that these three crosses govern all of the progress that the disciple makes, right up through the first five initiations, ending, of course, with a cardinal cross. And we're going to put some particular emphasis on the cardinal cross because it is the path to the intuitive and ultimately the opening of the heart and the understanding of the divine will. So I'm going to begin this session with just a short video, and it's actually the same one that we left off with in our last session, sort of recapitulating. And it relates to the mutable cross. And we discussed the importance of electricity throughout all of these presentations. The Tibetan has said that the most important esoteric science for the age of Aquarius is the science of astrology, the oldest science. But he also points out that the science of electricity is also the most important science for humanity, but it is one that's in its infancy and is just beginning to emerge. The idea that everything is electrical, everything is magnetic, everything is frequencies, waves, and that as we penetrate through the portal of initiation, through the qualities of color, sound, vibration, number, geometry, heat, light, we are going to experience these places of great beauty and power directly. So you can see once again on your screen the major polarities of Sagittarius, Gemini, Virgo, Pisces, expressed in the mutable cross, but each one of these also has lesser polarities. And when we animate it and do a little mini meditation in the next, you'll be able to see that in motion. So let's step back, take a deep breath, and imagine that you are the point within this center. It's a point within four different dual magnetic points, but also it's the expression of the will at the very, very center, the dark center. So okay, excellent. The Tibetan often speaks about the Christ and the relationship to the number 8. And even though the full recognition and realization of Christ consciousness fully flowers during the cardinal cross experience, you can see the early tentative formation of that by studying the symbol. The Tibetan says that all of the centers are multiples of 2 or 4. So if you take the 3 different cardinal crosses, you see that you go from 4 with the mutable cross, and then to 8 with the cardinal, with the fixed when you add 4 more, and then ending with the cardinal, which is, of course, 12. So there's a lot of very powerful symbolism in electricity as seen passing in composing the different centers, the different bodies, the different principles. One of the things that we've reviewed in earlier presentations is the fact that energy, higher energy, wells up from an unseen place or higher level. And this is why studying contemporary science, where they claim that the Big Bang is how it all came into existence, HPB or DK would refute that by pointing out every level of reality, either going up and down the hierarchy or chain of energies, it emerges, it wells up like a fountain spraying forth. And this image of the four electrical magnets composed of two lesser forces really, really shows graphically that we are entering into a process of expansion that is really multidimensional and happening on many sides simultaneously. Are there any questions about this image or any comments that people would like to share about the little mini meditation?
I don't see anything so far. Oops, I do now.
Okay, excellent.
Go ahead, Francis.
Just a comment in the meditation, very much appreciated that. I'm reminded of the symbol 1111, four ones, points. It can be related to this.
Excellent, yes. Good observation. Anyone else like to make a comment?
Yes, we have a written comment. Asha says, please can you repeat about the 4, 8, 12, and about each cross?
Well, I guess it's helpful for each person who's participating to know a little more about the crosses. And DK says we're governed by these three crosses at different times in our development. And the first cross, which is the mutable cross, is the first one that impacts the aspirant and probationer as they're moving forward on the path. Then the second cross, which is the fixed cross, that emerges when you're beginning to take probably the first and second initiations. And the third cross, all of these composed of four astrological signs, the third cross, the cardinal, is when you're reached third initiation and those higher levels that transpire afterwards. I hope that's helpful. While I'm waiting for any additional questions, I'd like to point out that the Tibetan says in Cosmic Fire that the symbol of the Buddhic permanent atom is a figure eight turned on its side. And when you look at this animation, you can see a figure eight. In fact, you can see several. Whichever way you relate these different astrological signs, you can see how they can be woven by this symbol called the lemonscape or dual torus. In other words, this is a cross section, and we're going to sort of demonstrate this as we move along. We're talking about lives that are spherical and not linear. Okay, any additional questions? Yes, Rose.
I just want to say that it's this image kind of really relates the nature of polarity, that everything has its polarity, but that that polarity itself creates like this Laya point or this vortex or this point from which something can come from apparently nothing. It always has to have polarity. And it's, I really like the relationship to astrology, because it kind of, in my view, shows how astrology works on an electrical level or energetic level, that there's this magnetic quality in how the different signs, because we have the opposite signs, and that with this polarity creates a point of tension that manifests something. That's the way when I that's what my thoughts come to mind when I look at this image.
Excellent. Thank you. BL, any?
Yes. I see. Yes. Chris says, the image looks like apples sliced in half, and I'm reminded of the apple of life, the symbol of life.
Excellent.
Something in the apple of knowledge.
Well, all of these very esoteric symbols have their counterpart in the natural world. They're not the exclusive domain of very high, lofty mental thoughts. They exist on all planes, and they exist through all of the seven rays. And if you study an apple, you will see that it's formed like a vortex. In fact, that prototype can be seen all throughout nature in so many different forms in different ways. Okay, any additional comments?
Yes, Francis has his hand up again. Please go ahead. You should be able to talk.
Yes, just an observation. Speaking of the number 8 on its side.
Yes.
Of infinity.
Yes.
Those are pointing out the polarities. So the polarities, infinity, that cancel each other out, equate to infinity.
Excellent. That's a good insight. Thank you, Francis. The idea of polarity is inherent with all of the ageless wisdom. It's not just Blavatsky or the Tibetan or Agni Yoga. It's really in all white magic, alchemy, Gnostic, Sufi, I mean, all the different traditions, and there's way too many to list. We move forward on the path, not simply by taking over the new and creative, but by pushing away from the old and that which is no longer needed. It's sort of a push-pull. And the Tibetan clearly states in the study of color and sound that, excuse me, when you want to build in to your aura, your different bodies, certain qualities, you visualize certain colors. When you want to throw out of your aura certain energies that you no longer need or want, you use antagonistic colors. Now, somebody might say, well, why would one want to bring antagonistic colors into their auric field? Not antagonistic in that they're negative or bad, but they're antagonistic towards that which you want to remove out of your auric field, so you bring them in and they drive out. So in one case, you're building in with color and sound, and then at other times, you're driving out with color and sound. And every color has its polar opposite. And this is one of the secrets of initiation, and it's one of the reasons why it's very important to know your soul ray, your personality ray, and what color that they are represented by, which ray. Ray 1 is going to be red, orange, gold. Ray 2, and I'm just generalizing for convenience here, ray 2 is going to be blue. Ray 3, green. Ray 4, yellow, cream. Ray 5, orange, or different shades of blue. 6, rose, or light blue. Ray 7, violet or white. And those colors can be built in with great potency when you begin to see the qualities of electricity as something that can be extended, something that can be built. In fact, this is what the Antakarana Bridge is. It's building with electricity, but it's building with different types of electricity that have their signatures. And those signatures are the devas, the elementals, and the angelic kingdoms that assist you in this building process. Okay, great. Any additional comments?
Yes. Diana says, when I contemplate the dynamic image, I was singing at the same time the Gayatri. And as soon as I closed my eyes, the movement was transformed in concentric colored circles.
Excellent. Well, the Tibetan says that everything can be seen as like a pebble dropping into a still pond. If you can imagine, the monad is the initial impulse of the pebble dropping in the still pond being all the different levels of material substance. It's at its most potent impact when it first gives its clarion note or sound. And then as it ripples out, it ripples down into the lower levels, it loses its potency until it finally reaches a point of stasis or total calm. And most of humanity lives in the outer regions where it's very calm, and each progression through the initiations are moving towards that central impact where the monadic pebble, symbolically speaking, first gave out that impulse, that call. Humanity's got to respond to the call. Okay, great.
We have a couple more.
Okay, then let's do them.
Michael says, perhaps acting under the law of repulse.
Yes.
That was in the pushing out. And then Chris says the four elements, earth, air, fire, water, are represented in the four zodiac signs of the corners.
Yes, and this is true of all three of the crosses. Four astrological signs, as we reviewed at our last presentation, but each one representing earth, air, fire, and water. Excellent. Okay, Francis.
Yeah, just very quick comment on how important I feel it is that the monadic clarion call or note, as it extends through the human oversoul,
yes,
individualized aspects, and we can reflect that note or call, so to speak, to group action.
Yes. We have to keep in mind that the personality ray is just a sub-ray of the soul ray, and that the soul ray is just a sub-ray of the monadic ray. So when you follow back to the source, you're just reiterating is the key word that Tibetan uses when he says that the personality is a reiterated word of the soul. The soul is a reiterated word of the one monadic sound. And that's why we say that we build the Antakarana, but it may be just as accurate from another point of view to say we simply discover that which has always been there. And we strengthen that bridge by our creative use of color and sound, vibration, and our thoughts. Okay. This image I've used many times, and I'm showing it to the group now because the next image that you're going to see, which is animated, has this in the background, but it's a little difficult to discern because the next image is not the highest resolution, but it still gives an important insight into the idea of the sphere and how the sphere can be broken down into four quadrants. Now, here's an image of that right here. And you'll see it very subtly in the background. And when we activate it, you're going to see these four quadrants all moving simultaneously. And if you look right in the center, you'll see there's an equal dom cross. Ledbetter, who's not always been entirely dependable with some of his observations, I think was nevertheless correct when he said that energy from one level to another, it comes in at right angles. It wells up and it comes in at right angles, at least on the lower levels. On the higher levels, it may be somewhat different and actually be more simplified, but on a basic level of the third ray, you have the first cross, which is the mutable cross. So now we're going to go, and we're going to do another little mini meditation. You're going to see the same identical image we just showed animated, only as if it's more spherical. And within that sphere, there are four lesser quadrants. Take a deep breath, relax. Okay, excellent. If you look very carefully at that image, on the furthermost points to the right and left, midway down, there's a six-pointed white star. And I don't know if everybody can see that because this is a very poor graphic. When you observe the movement of these quadrants, you'll notice there are arrows going in both directions at the same time. And that is actually a closer approximation of how a spherical life that makes up all the entities in the inner worlds, all your bodies are all spheroidal. And there are two energies that are over, they have a parent energy, which is the equal dom cross. And the parent has like offsprings. And the offsprings, they have offsprings. And through the law of correspondence and the law of analogy, you can keep breaking this down, particularly if you could see, which is very hard to discern, the triangles and the geometry in the background that's moving behind this quadrant. It's, again, and I apologize for being redundant, it's similar to the vortex that we saw just prior to this, where you have like a donut with all the seven rays pouring out, and there's a vortex coming in and a vortex coming out. But that's only one dynamic. It can have more entry points than just two. Okay, good. Are there any comments on this animation?
Not so far.
I think these images, in spite of some of the limitations of the quality, can be very, very evocative. The earlier one that we shared was primarily orange and green. And although all of the colors are found along all of the seven rays in their subray colorings, in other words, I can say ray one is red, but the other, it has seven subplanes. And those seven subplanes carry on the lesser, the additional rays, but in miniature. So when I say that the last image was primarily fifth ray and third ray because it was orange and green, you have to sort of take that observation with a grain of salt. Now this one, it's more yellow, gold, rose, and light blue. So we've gone from ray 3, 5 to more of ray 4. And this is apt to, it depends on the person. The orange green also had some yellow in it too, but this has a lot of yellow, which really activates the heart center. The rose color activates the human heart center or the astral body, and the light blue also. So I think it's important for us to realize that we're not just viewing static symbols in these little mini meditations. We're looking at potential portals or openings within the etheric body in which certain forces can enter if our interior concentration is focused enough and we have the intention. Okay.
Rose has her hand up.
Yes.
Oh, so does Francis.
What I like about this, just a quick comment, is that normally when I think of a cross, I think of a vertical line and a horizontal line. I think of straight lines. But here I'm seeing crosses made out of circles, made out of spherical and curved lines, which I hadn't before ever really considered a cross, you know, in that way. So with the earlier image, the magnetic one of the astrological signs, we had four points, but yet it was these curved bands that ended up creating, you know, this vertical and horizontal cross. And here this latest image shows the same thing, but animated, but with these concentric circles. So it just widens my horizon in what I, you know, that, you know, if you look out in nature, everything is, there are not squares. It's all spirals and circles, and whether it's a plant or maybe a crystal might be, I don't know, but most things, I changed my mind, maybe most things are curved versus straight angles in nature. So anyway, it's just another way of looking at that the circle can also make the straight line.
Excellent. Any additional comments?
Yes, Francis has his hand up. Go ahead, Francis.
Just a quick comment. As observing, as you mentioned, Duane, the opposing arrows within the circles, I think, are again symbolic of the counteracting polarities or principles and create a stable foundation for the entire representation here.
Excellent. Also notice at the very center, you have a cross with like a beam of light coming out. The brightest part of the whole symbol is right in the center, and it's a cross, an equal time cross that is on a long violet shape. So there's just your ray 1 and 7. And also white light can be the synthesis of all colors, just as total darkness. Okay, good. Any additional comments?
I would like to add something.
Please.
You know, DK talks about balancing the opposites. We have to learn to do that. And then he talks about fusing the opposites.
Yes.
So we see them, especially in these animations of yours, we see them in motion, but part of that motion has to be to balance them and to fuse them and to recognize that it is the same line. And then he also talks about not only resolving the opposites, but resolving the squares. So yes. Ultimately, when we're finished with the mutable cross and ready to mount the fixed cross, we have learned to work from that balanced hub, from that point of light right there, where we can wield the the four arms as necessary as part of that one entity called the mutable cross. And then, of course, we do the same thing. So we resolve the 12 into the 6 and the 6 into the 3 and the 3 eventually back up into the 1.
Excellent. That is profound. Excellent. The idea that our planet is surrounded by a grid of etheric squares that really do not sufficiently protect the planet from the overspilling of cosmic evil from decaying constellations and other huge things going on way out there in the heavens. It's a very important concept because when you're going through the crosses, you're also learning the techniques of like the triangles where you take, well, you work, of course, first from yourself. You take the etheric squares that sort of tessellate your different bodies. You turn them by taking a diagonal line across the square, you create two triangles. Now, your etheric body or your astral, your mental body, any of your bodies is now 3, 4, 5 times as potent. And not only does it insulate you from evil and negativity and planetary bad karma, it also allows you to be outgoing with your service in that now you have many times the potency to serve. So this is very, very important what BL has just outlined, and there's many, many practical applications of this idea of polarity and unifying tension. Tension is something that drives the aspirant and probationer right up a wall, but creative tension is what the white magician uses to move forward on the path of initiation. And it's all a question of knowing how to recognize energy and to utilize it. And sometimes what appears to be bad, what appears to be aggravating us and causing us distress, may be in disguise a saving force that has yet to be recognized, or if recognized, has failed to be utilized creatively, constructively, through these new Aquarian teachings that are going to be very scientific. Excellent. Great comments. Any additional comments? Francis, go ahead.
One quick comment. As you divide the square, the diagonal into a triangle, very powerful, and I feel that as it evolves to a 6-star, it really is protective of the tensions and the energy, as we say, lower elementals.
Exactly.
That still haunt, shall we say, humanity.
It's like a mace. It's like a crusader who puts on this mail, or this mail, this protective clothing to ward off injury. And the tighter the web is, just like Francis has outlined, I've mentioned one diagonal line, but when you continue to bisect it, every time you bisect it, for those of you who've studied Buckminster Fuller, it increases its strength. And there's nothing stronger than a sphere because it's protected on all sides. And it's an autonomous, thank you, Rose. This is such a powerful symbol because this shows squares transformed into triangles, and then further, as Francis said, further subdivided, becoming more potent every time. And when we get into the study of esoteric sacred geometry, we're going to see that all these powerful energies that have certain colors and sounds, they have a parallel geometric form. And just to quote the Tibetan, at the end of every incarnation, each disciple is recognized by their geometric form. Some are more oblong in their patterning, and others, I mean, there's an infinite variety of geometric forms that can come out of the Platonic solids. Infinite. And we've discussed here just a few of them, one being the dodecahedron, and why the dodecahedron is so potent, because it relates towards the Christ, it relates towards the Buddhic plane. And when you can symbolize, when you can visualize, these different images when you meditate, and we're not asking anybody to change their meditations. All we're attempting to do here is to potentially make available some animations and symbols and images that anyone can take into their existing meditations for additional progress. Okay, great. Any additional comments?
No, I don't see any.
Okay. We're going to go to the sphere at the summit. Now, before we exit this whole idea of the crosses and how energy flows in electricity, I want to review one last thing the Tibetan says about crosses in the last volume of the Arrays and Initiations. And where he talks about these culminating crosses, he gives these meditations, of which there are seven, and they're all incredibly powerful. And I recommend that if you go into the, actually, this might be in one of the Dina books. I can't quite remember. Yeah, it's in the Dina, that the part that I'm referring to, I see the quote at the bottom, the page number. It says, it will allow you to get a sense of maybe where you are and what meditation you perhaps could value from. And again, we're not asking anybody to change their meditations, but just potentially review other things that the Tibetan has shared. Anyway, he summarizes those with this. Would somebody, BL, would you be kind enough to read this for us?
Sure. The sphere at the summit. In our last series of instructions, I summed up or summarized all the meditations, seven in number, which I have given to the group. I tried to show you the sequence of critical points in the life of the man in training for initiation. The last of these meditations was called the cross, is the expression of the vertical and the horizontal life. This was portrayed by two crosses. You will notice also in this symbol that the secondary point of focus appears where all the lines meet and cross each other. This point represents the disciple's personality, into which the higher radiance must pour and from which spiritual energy reaches out on all sides. The long limb of the triple cross symbolizes to the disciple that he must go down into the very depths of human life in order to prepare the masses for the reappearance of the Christ and for the externalization of the hierarchy. The sphere at the summit of the cross portrays the place of the disciple's consciousness, his life of reflection, of constant awareness, and the steady focus of his attention is higher than the vertical life of the aspirant, than his horizontal life of service, and indicates the measure of his conscious activity in the ashram. Forget not that an ashram in the hierarchy is on a higher plane than that of the soul.
Excellent. So now we're going to show you those three crosses and how the very apex of these crosses is the sphere. The two upper crosses are put together to create the lower cross, and out of those recognitions and out of those realizations comes the sphere. And that is the symbol of the disciple's consciousness and the soul on its own plane. So now what we're going to do is, yes. Now, this is a quick symbol of what a sphere might look like. And the reason why I'm placing it here is because we're actually going to see a sphere. A sphere made up of seven rotating lines of force, symbolizing the seven rays. And that is where our souls will be found, on one of those seven rays. So let's pull up the next image, which gives a little clearer representation. Okay. What you have is a point of abstraction, which is would be the center where all of these rotating lines come together. This is like foha. This is the laya point. This is the point of will that cyclically brings down through the different levels these expressions of God. And even though this sphere does not delineate the seven rays in quite the way that I would like, it nevertheless gives you a tremendous visual idea of the souls, the master's ashrams made up of these different soul groups, and how they are all connected together by the one ashram, the externalizing ashram. And that's why Master Moya, even though it's all taking place within a second ray solar system, and love is the immediate goal, Master M is the presider over all esoteric schools, because he represents the will, the principle of directed purpose, the place of pure being that even those initiates in the hierarchy struggle to understand, Shambhala. So good. So once again, I want everybody to just relax, get focused, and take a very deep breath and just imagine your own soul on its own plane, one of seven colors, rotating. I'm almost embarrassed to speak when I listen to the magnificent music of, I think, Debussy, and I recall that was Claire de Lune. It is such an incredibly powerful, evocative image. Imagine that is just one of your vehicles, your etheric body, your astral, mental, buddhic sheath, atmic sheath, monadic, logoic. Imagine seven of those all nesting one within the other, each one connected by a semi-permeable membrane, so that each one has its own autonomy, but all of them are connected like the net of Indra to this lattice work of electrical and magnetic force through color, sound, vibration, geometry. It literally takes my breath away, and I've seen it hundreds of times. Would anybody like to share any insights from watching this?
Francis, go ahead.
It's a beautiful representation of the seven colors rotating within the sphere on multi-levels, and seems to me almost always deferring to the violet and then the white.
Yes.
So important and symbolic of us entering this new Aquarian age. And within the white, I feel the presence almost of the Shambhala impact, which you referred to Shambhala earlier.
Right.
And Asha has her hand up too.
Go ahead.
Okay, I keep trying to unmute you, Asha, and I'm not able to.
Now, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm without going into facts, I'm just responding as an anecdotal way, kind of. I was reading something yesterday, and it just touched me deeply, how we were also connected by like a golden thread as humans, as humanity, with permanent atom of planet. I don't want to go into the facts, but somehow it reminds me of the fact that we have this multiplicity of these seven, but then it goes beyond into the connection beyond the human into possibly planet Earth as well. It's just a thought that came that I wanted to share.
Excellent.
That's not based in any factor, any
that's beautiful
knowledge.
Well, personal experience is always more potent and more powerful and more real than theory.
Yes, yeah. And that filled me with so much awe and wonder that we, you know, like the permanent atom, eternal flame in our heart.
Yes.
Has this like a gossamer golden connection with the permanent
gossamer
of sun of even pressure of planet Earth.
Yes.
I don't understand it intellectually at all, but it just was like something, it was evocative, that's all.
Gossamer is a beautiful word to describe energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to keep in mind that the human Antahkarana, or the human bridge that all of humanity is aspiring to tread as one entity, is probably made up of all the seven rays, because all the seven ray types are a part of humanity. But that Antahkarana bridge surely has the most powerful golden yellow hue, because that's the soul ray of humanity, is the fourth ray. And that color, golden yellow, comes forth powerfully. Excellent. Any additional comments?
Yes. Risa says fractals within fractals.
Yes. The law of correspondence, or the law of supplementary seven, sounds like a rather somewhat impersonal law, but when you see it enacted visually, it has a tremendous amount of magnetism and warmth. And what you are literally seeing are fractals that keep repeating themselves on infinitely large and infinitely small scales. And these fractals are all connected, that each parent has numerous offsprings, and those offsprings have additional offsprings. And even though under certain conditions they may be slightly different than the parent, they are very, very similar. And that by analyzing, like in holography, if you analyze a holographic image, just one little part of it, you can actually follow back from that small part to the full image. Because a hologram, no matter where you look in a 360-degree view, it's all the same thing. Excellent. Any additional comments?
Yes. Diana says, somehow I felt the need for it to expand and contract from atom to the infinite cosmos in reverse.
Yes. The further we pursue our occult and esoteric studies, along with our service, we find that the individual breath or the individual life that we all have, some point must be given up to what DK calls the group breath. And when a person is moving deeply into meditation, they will find that their breathing will automatically become deep and rhythmic. This is one of the basic teachings of Raja Yoga. And at some point, there'll be a place of stillness, and the aspirant, the disciple, the probationer, they will literally realize that they are breathing and having their life on a new and more dynamic level. They are literally stepping out of the old self and stepping into what DK calls the divine breath, and what Christ called the place where everything becomes renewed, the life more abundantly. And it's really at the center of all these spheres when you follow them back to their source. And they do. They palpitate and they breathe in and out, each one attempting through this mastery of breath, which is one of the final stages of yoga. And we're not attempting to teach it here, but it allows the disciple to learn pranayama in the lawful and correct way that they are going to become as what Rumi would call obedient to the heart, the inner heart, or what DK would call obedient to the laws of the soul. And it's all done with a corresponding intention, power of visualization, and correct rhythmic breathing.
And then Dana says, that was absolutely awesome, especially after a 12-hour day, five of which was playing gongs around people.
Well, this is sort of a visual gong. And keep up the good work, Dana. We can feel your bowls vibrating and your gongs thundering way up here. And we'll be down there visiting soon enough.
And that's all I've got right now.
Okay, excellent. Now, I thought this was sort of interesting. It's a little scientific I was reading a scientific journal, and I don't have the full article here, but they said that, and this is actually a few years old, they said that in this article that scientific researchers found that the shape of a light photon resembled the ancient solar cross or equal dom cross. And I thought, it just shows how God, in his, her, high estate, duplicates these patterns infinitely, right down onto subatomic and atomic levels, that the very basis of all manifestation and where the crossover place is between the physical body and the etheric levels, the photon level, the plasma level, that they've been able to determine by experiments that it actually has the form of a solar cross. You've seen it on the shields of the Crusaders, maybe perhaps not fully cognizant of its more esoteric meaning, but with all good intention, trying to insulate what they saw as their special teachings when they really needed to understand that the people they were fighting against had the same ideals and used the same symbols in their unique religious traditions. But, okay, and now we're getting moving along here, and this is another image that I've used. View, fit on screen. I have a new keyboard, and without Rose's help, I would once again be lost. Okay. We've shared this before, and it's a sort of a fitting way to semi-end this work we're doing with electricity and magnetism. On the left, you have the chart that I rendered, taken directly from the text and the words of DK, Cosmic Fire, pages 169 to 170. And many times I've explained that when you look at this chart, it may seem a little intimidating, but it really simplifies the idea of initiation in this way. On the left-hand side, you have the masculine rays, 7, 3. On the right-hand side, you have the feminine rays, 6, 4. And the Ajna Center actually expresses ray 4 as well as ray 5. The higher you go, the more the masculine, feminine blend, and the centers are what DK calls dual centers, because they're activated approaching the third initiation, and they're very synthetic, the higher head centers. But every initiation that we will undergo is graphically rendered here in these triangles. First initiation, mastery of sexual energy to the throat, to the base of the spine, back to the sacral, throat, base of the spine. You're creating a linking bridge between those three principles. And what happens is that the sacral energy, and we're not in any way demeaning sex because it is a very vital and spiritual aspect of each person's development, when the heart is in the right place. But till then, it can lead many people into wandering into the veil of illusion. But anyway, the sacral throat is lifted up to the throat. The throat draws it up. You lift it, and it liberates these elementals that are what DK calls prisoners of the planet, sacral to the throat. And then that's a masculine initiation on the left. Feminine initiation. Next one is the second initiation, solar plexus to the heart. And this in no way demonstrates that emotion is undesirable or bad or isn't a necessary area of development, because there are seven levels of every one of these centers. But the lower aspect of the solar plexus is lifted up into the heart. The heart saves these lower elementals that are trapped. They are also prisoners of the planet. Solar plexus to the heart, to the base of the spine. Solar plexus to the heart, base of the spine. Okay, there's the first and second initiation. And I'm not going to go through the rest because I've done this many times before, but I just want to give a little background. Okay, the left side is more of the negative. The right side is more of the positive. And the central channel is the main conduit. In other words, the ultimate goal at the third initiation is the natural progression of the kundalini up the spine that opens all these centers in their fourth dimensional vision and then eventually opens up fully, because the head centers have to already be open somewhat for this to happen. But the kundalini exits out the thousand petal lotus, the crown, first passing through the egoic center, of course. You don't get to the monad yet until the soul is fully awakened. And then you have these lesser polarities, like if you swing your eye over to the right, you'll see duplicated there the same thing over to the left, only in a very simplified form and according to electrical polarities. And you can see it. The head center at the very top, that cross, is the it's like pure will. At the very bottom, it's pure matter. And this is where the father and the mother, Shiva Shakti, they finally meet, join, and a person becomes liberated at the third initiation and afterwards seen electrically. So, if there are any questions to those charts, please bring them up now, because we're going to go into an animation that's going to sort of put all this into perspective.
I don't see anything right now.
Okay, excellent.
Oh, yes, now I do. They were typing. Lisa says, what came to mind on the crosses was that the two combined, then added to that is the rod of initiation?
Yes. Yes. All of the crosses are part of the rod of initiation. And at each initiation, someone officiates. In the earlier initiations, probably the first and second, it's the Christ opening the heart. And then at the third initiation, it's the Lord of the world working through his, her representatives that become the rod of initiation. So that's a good analogy. That's a good parallel. Lisa, thank you. Francis.
A quick comment on the Shiva Shakti energy you mentioned. Shiva being the ascending triangle and the Shakti being the descending triangle. And when they are balanced and met, the sixth star and the many then iterations to the higher levels.
Excellent. Yes. Francis has studied many different forms of esoteric truth and is really shared so many insights around the use of the Shri Yantra. And I would say that the Shri Yantra is very similar in construction to the image on the left. It's just that what I've done is I've taken these triangles. In other words, if you're a Hindu and you're studying the Shri Yantra, and you're at a very advanced place, you know those triangles represent certain forces. Well, when you look at DK's list of the triangles between the first and fifth initiations, these are the same triangles, but they're rendered differently. It's more fifth ray. It's more broken down into the scientific aspect of it. And if you were a Hindu studying these ancient teachings, you would find a parallel equivalent through their own unique contribution, because you'd go from this into pure triangular geometry. Okay, excellent. So now we're going to go to the next image. And this is one we've also shared. But again, some of these are so universal in their application that it's worth repeating, because through repetition comes a better and deeper understanding. We're sort of using some of the same images, but in slightly different ways. Now, this is a magnetic entity. And once again, we're back to ray 3 and 5, but there's some fourth ray in there, and it can represent any of the rays. To the right and the left, you have these little black dots. And in some cases, there may only be 3 centers open, or 5 or 7. Now, we are told that we have 7 centers, but if you take the upper triad, you can say that there's really 10 levels. And then we get into the tetractys, which we won't discuss because it'll just take us away from the main thought here. But I want you to imagine, as you're watching this, that this is the rod of initiation. And I want you to imagine, as you're watching and listening to this animation, what would happen if there was any obstruction between the highest point of this and the lowest point. You'll see the energy pours, it cascades out of the top, it descends down into the vertical apple shape, dual vortex, and then it's drawn once again back right up to the top. And all illness, sickness, or disease is the result of the improper distribution of energy through the centers. So imagine on the right and left, masculine, feminine, you have these centers. And this huge panorama of cascading energy is coming down, but in some cases, it gets caught in these little eddies, these little secondary centers. And that is the chakra system. And what they do is they protectively step down this supreme revelation of the father and the mother, the consorts in the highest level, being broken down so that we're not overwhelmed. In other words, people say, oh, I want to see God in its highest form. Only an aspirant or a probationer would make that claim, because true disciples who've had powerful spiritual experiences they know that you need to move into these areas very, very methodically, very slowly, very lovingly, because they're very powerful. Okay, so with that, take a deep breath, get centered, and feel this is the rod of initiation.
afraid, non-belief, and in us, love, love.
The music for that was by Lisa Gerard, and it's perhaps best known for the theme from The Gladiator, which in spite of a lot of violence and brutality had some very profound and touching moments when people were giving their all and giving up their lives for others in service. Lisa Gerard claims that God came to her and spoke to her in a different language than what we're familiar with. And this is what she put into music, what she called the language of God. Are there any questions or comments or things to share?
Yes, Asha has her hand up.
Yes, Asha.
Duane, I know there are many disciples on the phone call, but I'm going to share my thoughts, which are simplistic, and yet what you're doing is making me think on this level is that everything we've discussed is subtle forms, subtler. It's matter in the sense it's still creation. It's very subtle. It's wave. And yet, if we go beyond wave, then we have the absolute, where there is no manifestation. So this is everything we've talked about today and looked at finer and finer levels from form to wave, is still the manifested world, right? It's manifestation.
Yes.
So there's a thing beyond it. If it's beyond it, where none of this exists, that's what we would call the absolute, right?
Yes.
So I'm thinking it all just came to me as I was watching this. If it all exists simultaneously, if we didn't have time, space, and the dimensions that we're talking, that we're in now, that all of this is here now, in us, now, always, past, present, future.
Yes. Very well shared. And one of the things that we have to recognize is that symbols come in different potencies. They can be seen on different levels. And when you see something visually, like in real time or real space, which is of course an oxymoron, as we explore the unseen and the unrecognized, each symbol leads to another symbol, to another symbol, till eventually there are no symbols. There's just pure being, as you have just so eloquently shared. And behind every form is the formless. And these animations are, in my opinion, a closer approximation of the real truth. Compared to text or mere words, they come closer. If words are two or three steps away from God, then images and animations and certain symbols are two steps away. And of course, we have to only within ourselves take that last step and throw off all symbols, all text, all words, all concepts, ideas, and just experience pure being. And so when people in the group share these abstract experiences or insights, even if they may appear to veer off the subject, they are not, because that is the true subject. And I want to see more and more of that and additional sharing. Thank you.
Okay. Risa says, this is better than a Saturday night at the movie. And Francis has his hand up.
Go ahead, Francis.
A quick observation on the power of this symbolic representation. As the energy moves up the rod, of course, the energy then divides and the energy half splits to the right, or we'll say the positive aspect of the circle, and the energy then splits to the left, more the negative aspect, and comes down and again and combines and synthesizes for its effect within the rod.
Yes.
So again, the counteracting principles serve the purpose and come together within the rod.
Excellent. Any additional comments?
Yes. Lona has her hand up, and then Asha again.
Okay.
Oops. Okay, I'm trying to unmute you, Lona. I'm not able to unmute you for some reason.
Well, while we're waiting for her.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
It reminds me about Gemini.
Gemini, yes.
Gemini, but also the energies, 3, 4, and 5.
Yes.
Green, yellow, orange.
Right.
And I had the sign Gemini is connected to the.
Excellent. Christ. Fantastic. Thank you.
Pure love. Also, the earth is very deeply in this.
Yes. That's good. Thank you for sharing that.
And then Asha, go ahead.
Continue what I said earlier. I'm not sure what I'm saying, but your response is, I'm curious to hear your response. So extrapolating back to, so the absolute is always there.
Yes.
It was there before creation, will always be there. And so it's there now. And the manifestation. So we are always there with or without all of this.
Yes. Absolutely. Any additional comments?
So it's beyond creation. Yes. Okay.
Yes, beyond creation, absolutely.
So we are beyond God. We're older than God. I mean, past, present, future. We're beyond it all.
Yes.
The way I see it is, it's sort of like we live in this. When you get into these abstract, very abstract ideas of beyond time and space and the absolute, it's sort of like a reflection in a mirror. It's sort of like God, to know itself, sees the reflection. So then eventually the reflection in the mirror thinks that, oh, this is me and this is, you know, reality. But then it, as it starts to gain awareness of the much greater whole and the oneness, then all those mirrors dissolve into one, and then there's no longer the mirror, and the mirror would be all of manifested reality, time, space, matter, everything is this reflection, and it can only be a reflection because as soon as it's not, then it's just, I don't know what you would call it, but just like pure being, but without the reflective point or absolute. So we are the specks knowing ourselves. So we already are attained of that, whatever you would call it, that universal beingness of its highest state. And yet at the same time, we are this distant fragment that is unaware of itself, but it still is itself. If that makes any sense.
Excellent. It's a paradox. It's one way at this time, and then it's another way another time. And then it can be both at the same time, a third time. HBB said, if you don't want to deal with paradoxes, then don't follow the occult path, because it's full of paradoxes. Many people may see inconsistencies or errors, but they're simply paradoxes that can be reconciled when you reach a higher level and look back or look down or look synthetically at all the pieces of the great puzzle. Well, excellent. If there aren't any additional closing one, okay, good.
Yes, Francis has his hand up. Go ahead, Francis.
So just very quickly, I thought this closing, these analogies, I think are very powerful. They're analogies of reflection of the, shall we say, unbounded infinite. And we are just in the finite reflecting until we fully reflect the absolute number of mirrors, fully
yes.
Reflect the infinite, so to speak. Very powerful. Very good.
Excellent. Thank you, Francis.
Lisa says, the sense of force initiating from a point yet infinity.
Yes, I like that. Force initiated at a point of infinity. To me, that's like we make an effort, yet at the same time, we are already the infinite. And it's not so much going somewhere as it is recognizing what's already there. Okay, excellent. Well, we once again appreciate your contributions and you taking the time to share with us. I feel that we're building a very powerful mental field that can be emotionally felt. It can be stimulating to the heart, but it also reveals many, many aspects about the group life that we already know and are building on. So we send our love and our light. And if there's any additional questions, feel free to contact me either on Facebook, the Awakening the Higher Mind and Intuition on Facebook, or directly through my email. Excellent. We love you and we send you light.
Good night, everyone.